up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the
sun. Well, welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Miles. We got Ricky on the board. S&P futures are, we're down a little bit today. We're down 12. NASDAQ futures down 26. We're down a whole lot more, but we have come back some, like we do sort of every day, but we have come back some. Do we have Professor Carl?
You do.
How are you, man?
Well, I'm doing fine, I suppose. I woke up this morning and the sun was. Never mind. That's the bumper music. The NVIDIA's so-called CEO now says Marvell is the next $1 trillion company.
What about HPE? It was up 20-some bucks or 30%.
Well, so HPE goes, more AI.
And then
he says this about Marvell, and their stock skyrocket. You know, no specific reason why this would be. There was another announcement out of NVIDIA, which I found fascinating, which did lift their price some more.
It was only up 13 bucks yesterday. It's almost $300 billion in market cap.
I know it's not very much. Yeah, well, it's something. But the thing that I thought was rather fascinating about it was that they are now going to make chips for laptops and such. Okay.
And Microsoft was up a bunch after being up 3 days before, which of course the news must have leaked. Now this morning they're down 11.5 bucks.
Well, there's a basic problem with this, okay, which is that, yes, NVIDIA is going to do this, but the instruction set that they're using is ARMs. Now, most people don't understand this distinction really at all, which is fine, because, you know, you just pick up a computer and turn it on and use it, right? So the history of this is that the Intel instruction set, all the way back to MS-DOS, the original IBM PC, then was augmented for the 64-bit world, going beyond 32-bit CPUs, by AMD, and Intel adopted it, which is kind of interesting, in that the AMD extensions and their part of the instruction set is basically why you have modern computers. But everybody considers that to be the Intel instruction set, even though it only kind of sort of is. But all of your higher-end desktop and laptop machines use those chips. ARM was originally came to popularity from the mobile world, phones. They're also in the Raspberry Pis. It's a very competent instruction set, but it's different. They're totally incompatible with each other. So the problem here is that Windows software developers, in the general sense, don't much care for the ARM instruction set. So you have an operating system, but packaged software guys, QuickBooks, Adobe, office, for that matter, don't much care for this stuff. And so, please explain to me why all of a sudden NVIDIA deciding that they're going to build a chip that runs ARM. Now ARM processors do apparently are more power efficient for equivalent workloads, right? Which basically means in a battery-operated machine lasts longer. But that has a lot to do with the fact that where they started was phones, where, of course, they're all battery, right?
Yeah.
So power consumption is like maximum performance is not the metric. Power consumption is the metric. And so, that which you focus on, you tend to get better at. That's a big shock, right? And yet, here we are with this thing, and, more skyrocket, yet you've been able to buy ARM-based laptops and desktop machines for quite a while, and yet I know of several mainline.
If I wanted to buy one of those, what would I buy? Would I even know?
You could actually. If you just go laptop shopping, you probably really ought to pay attention to that, and it will be on the.
First
sticker.
Of all, I'm not a laptop guy sitting in front of a desktop 12 hours a day. So.
Well, I've got one because I.
I know. I mean, most people do. I mean, most regular people do. I don't need one. I got one of these here all day, and if I go home, I'm prepared for the show and one at all. The last thing I need is lug a laptop around.
Right, but here's. But well,
I might go tablet one of these days.
Well, one of the reasons that I've been a big fan of Lenovo's X1 Carbon series for a long time, simply because they're not large and.
But if I wanted to buy, I'm going to get one because my machine that is the all the quotes and stuff on it is, I'm not saying the latest and greatest, but it's really good because I want my quotes nice and fast. But now my other one my email server has got to be 15, 20 years old, and I don't want to disturb it. But now the machine is older than me. So,
right.
But so,
right.
And that one, but I mean, what would possess me to go get one of these new things for my new machine?
Well,
anything?
The argument that is frequently made for them is, first off, they tend to be cheaper because there's less in the way of licensing costs, okay, because the ARM and the AMD and Intel stuff is older and is full of proud manufacturers. Big shock, right?
Yep.
But the problem is that when it comes to buying software, they're not compatible. So you have to choose the correct version. What happens if what you want to run isn't supported by that particular thing? Okay. And by the way, it's not. All right. There are a number of packages. I don't think QuickBooks is supported by it anymore. I think it was taken down. And this also gets into what some manufacturers have done to people. For example, you've been able to get Office software, Microsoft Office, on Macs for quite a long time. Okay, now, a lot of people like Office. They like Word. They like Excel. They know it. They like it. Okay. Recently, Microsoft turned around and said, if your Mac is older than some version and cannot run the latest version of Mac OS, we're not just going to not publish any more updates. We're literally going to stop you being able to use what you previously bought.
Yeah, I know that. You've mentioned that before, and I've kind of run into that. I've heard people. That's pretty crappy.
Chief, it's not crappy. It's illegal. Okay, stop with this crappy stuff. This kind of thing, this is felony theft writ large to the tune of billions of dollars. I've had this done to me several times. I've got a couple packages here that I bought that the agreement that I entered into when I bought the software was you can load it on multiple computers, but you can only use it on one at a time. Now, that's entirely fair, right? I have a laptop and I have a desktop.
The subject I wanted to bring up with you today, you just walked right into it, which you always do, by the way, which
well, maybe that's why you like me.
This whole concept of immoral, illegal, the Justice Department,
they don't care.
Does not work for you and me. I mean, come on, let's figure that one out, right?
No kidding.
But this whole concept of You know, we blame it on young people, but I think it's our generation that the one is are being the idiots. I mean, I talked to a guy last night, one of the guys who I become friendly with and hangs around the local watering hole, and we were talking about, you know, corruption and this administration, and how people have gotten to be such. I mean, Lou is a guy who accused Matty Weber of being a moral relativist, and I'd never heard that term before, but now we sort of are, and everybody does it. And nobody walks into it essentially more than you do. I'm not saying that that's not a personal shot. I'm saying when we talk about the incredible corruption coming out of this administration, kids trading stocks, the president trading 3,500 trades on stocks that he's essentially talking about. We're, you know, stopping Air Force One.
At the time he's doing it.
You know, picking up the head of NVIDIA for a trip to China. Well, he's talking about how good NVIDIA is, the Palantir. It's on a scale that nobody even begins to... I mean, you didn't see, you know, little John Kennedy doing that. You didn't see Eisenhower's kids doing this.
But I did see Biden's kids.
Okay, there's one. Right now,
I'm saying, Chief, is that this is how it happens.
But that's exactly where I'm going with this.
Right.
How much of a... let's say Hunter Biden was an asshole, is an asshole. By the way, one of my friends, his daughter went to school out there and had a badge in Congress and knew Hunter Biden. He was an asshole then. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, how does that translate into a free ride for these people?
It doesn't.
But in most people's mind now, it does.
But it did. And I'll tell you how it happens. This is the same reason that now you just had in Atlanta, you just had another woman who was killed by a thug with a knife on the MARTA train.
Okay.
Which is basically exactly the same thing that happened to Irina in Charlotte.
Right. But
okay.
Same
offense. Okay. Now, here's the problem. One of those, the first one happens, and instead of all the people who have been arrested 15 times for violent crimes going to jail, right, it's considered divisive to paint a mural of her on a wall.
That's one of the topics I was going to touch on, but I was zeroing in on me being, you know, the son of a... What I'm trying to get is what when somebody does the justification, when somebody says, what about Hunter Biden, what exactly am I supposed to do with that? When you say, or if I were to say, being the son of a Southside cop, God, look at that guy going 110 miles an hour down the shoulder when everybody else is in traffic. Yeah, but you should see what they do in Miami. What does that have to do with anything? What does that outpeep even mean? When you say something like, "God, look at the antitrust violations in hospitals," and somebody says, right. "Yeah, but look what went on in the defense industry." What is that comment? What are that jumble of words even supposed to convey? Is it a justification? Is it? Is it
how people do? Well, that's how people take it, Chief.
I'm sorry, I'm being rigorous here, but what does that comment even mean? What am I supposed to do with it?
Well, what you're supposed to do, face, okay, and it's the same thing. It is the same thing that we have. It's another example. The other thing that's going on. Is, you know, we have all these illegal immigrants picking strawberries because Americans won't do it. Okay, I've heard that justification since the 1980s, for Christ's sakes.
Well, they would come over for 3 months, do it, and go back because nobody wanted to do it.
Well, but except they don't go do it. They don't go back now, right?
Okay. Well.
Okay. So it starts with that. So it starts with they come over for the 3 months and they go do it, but they didn't bother to do the paperwork. Largely because if you do the paperwork, you have to collect and remit the taxes, right? So they didn't do that. Never mind wage and hour laws and all the other stuff that goes along with this. You have to comply with those things because it's all above board.
But you fixate constantly on these people. I never see you raving about why didn't we clean up every redneck place in Idaho where people have guns because of the Timothy McVeigh stuff. Nobody ever cared about that.
Whoa, hold on a minute, Chief. So that becomes the excuse. Americans won't do that, right? Where we are today is a result of the excuse. Instead of saying, absolutely not, every effing one of those people needs to leave right now, and every person who employs them needs to go to prison right now, because the law says that's illegal, and it's been illegal since the 1950s. It's not a new thing. We don't need Congress. We just need the cops to show up. All right. What you have now as a result of this is you, along with your clients, along with a whole bunch of people I know, all cheering because Microsoft and IBM have seen their stock prices skyrocket. Why have they done that? Because two-thirds of the people working today in Silicon Valley are foreigners. And they're here because they gained the H-1B system.
As you probably know.
By the way, is equally illegal.
But if you want to select issues, okay, I'm much more concerned with what you just said than I am with the poor guy picking strawberries because I don't want to pick them.
But you got one because you tolerated the other.
I know you. No. Not even close.
Chief, if I'm not going to enforce the law,
we're not enforcing it anywhere.
Oh, well, gee. So where do we start? How about we start with all of them?
Where I'm going with this is, I was in a college class, and somebody was, the thing was about on the Holocaust, right? And everybody was talking about, God, how many people got killed, not just Jews, gypsies, I mean, you name it, anybody Hitler didn't like. And somebody out peeped and said, well, you know, history has shown that Stalin killed more people, and by the way, he was our ally. And I'm sitting there, it was the first time I ever heard something like that, and I sat there and go, the kid's probably right.
But, yeah, he is.
But what exactly am I supposed to do with this? Is that an excuse? Does that mean Hitler gets a get out of hell card? I mean, because you can find somebody worse, or you can deflect the topic so you stop talking about it. What exactly? But you hear that every day now. What are we supposed to do with this? I don't even know. By the way, as more as you may think I'm arguing with you, I'm on your side. But I think that people that we know are impacted in terms of dollars anyway, much more by the corruption at the high level than they are the guy picking soybeans or whatever it is.
Okay, so, but Chief, one begets the next.
Well, okay, but I mean,
you're
going to say that in order to stop corruption in NVIDIA, we're going to start sweeping strawberry fields. I don't get that connection.
I'm saying we're going to sweep them all at once.
Okay, well now if you drive around, come on up here, we'll have a drink together. I'll drive you around on the Home Depot. We've chased all the Hispanic people from the Home Depot. Is that stopping Trump's trading? I don't think so.
No, but you know,
what is it stopping? At some level, maybe it makes sense, but really, I mean,
What is it stopping? Well, if you want to have some handyman work go on in your house, it's now the person who's doing it is actually paying taxes and is being paid market wage.
I don't know about that, but
if I don't make my estimated payment in another well 2 weeks now, right? Come tax time, the IRS is going to crawl up my butthole and find me.
Well, it's by the way, companies don't do that anymore because you don't pay people cash because you can't deduct it. It's individual homeowners that have somebody.
I understand that, but now you're going to
care about a lot of those guys pay taxes, by the way. But here's my issue. I heard one last week, and I don't know what to do with this. I'm lobbing ideas out there because you and I talk a lot about things that are quote wrong, and nobody gives a crap. Basically, I mean, I heard one last week that when I got more involved in the. Was it a paycheck protection program, whatever it was during COVID?
Yeah.
Than I ever wanted because we could have been involved and were to a small amount, but I actually I'm very aware that A, we are the most honest people that ever walked to our detriment.
There were a bunch of scams.
But I went through it and I said, I know where people are going to scam here, because I actually read the law, right, or most of it,
right,
and which I don't normally do, and I'll admit. And I'm sitting there going, first of all, here's the people that are going to make the money, and here's the people that aren't. And I was absolutely stunned, and I've said this probably 10 times, that the law kept getting changed because they knew how many people were cheating.
Right.
And it ended up, you know, I'll use the term, costing us. Now, I never had my hand out for anything, but for that particular fiasco, between the COVID and the riots here, we were shut down downtown for basically 2 years. We came up the back elevator and never had no client came close to the building. So it really did hurt us. I mean, because, you know, clients like to come and see your place. Duh.
No, really?
Yeah. And it really did hurt us. But, you know.
Go figure, right.
But here I see some guy. Well, first of all, my attorney friend Bill is representing 3, 4, 5 of these people that they're going after because of COVID fraud. Well, 3, 4, 5. I'm going to say 2, 3, 4 of them never got any money.
Right.
They filed the application, which they shouldn't have. And they're going after them. Okay. Now, if I'm going to focus my law enforcement, it probably wouldn't be on people that never got a dime. Not to say it's accurate that they weren't sleazebags or at least thought about it, but then at the end of the day, they never got any money.
I'll get that.
And some other guy last week, and, you know, he's a DuPage County or something, the guy gets 80 grand, and they want him to give the 80 grand back, which I guess he did. They gave him a fine of 30 grand, which I will, you know, everybody gets a spanking once in a while. 3 years in jail? What the hell is that all about?
Well, okay, hold on a minute. Now, I know someone, not a friend, but I knew the guy, that he scammed this as well, okay, during that period of time. They caught him, like, 4 years later.
But they're going after the lowest hanging fruit.
Well, now hang on a minute. They came in, they audited him on that. Then they found out that wasn't the limit of it.
Okay, well, they found other stuff.
The reason they found it is the data matching. You know, computers are very good at doing that, right? You gave somebody a W-2 that worked there, and here's these line items for the, you know, their FICA and their Medicare tax that were, you know, were withheld, right, out of their check. And their federal income tax. Oh, by the way, that money never got to the Treasury.
Yeah, I mean,
here's the thing. They showed up and they padlocked the place, and he's done. All right. Now, as far as I'm concerned...
But they're not going to go to the Trump's trading guy.
Well, no, I get that, but the thing is this guy absolutely richly deserved it because he robbed every one of us.
A lot of people deserve a lot of stuff. I mean,
But I'm just saying, I cannot. Okay, there are cases like what you're talking about, right? But the thing is this: we have within this country, and you're right in that. Okay, so this guy got busted, okay, and ruined, financially ruined.
Well, I don't have a problem. Sorry to interrupt.
As he should have been.
Okay, but now my formula would be. Pay the 80 grand back. You tried to steal 80 grand. You had a 10% chance of being caught. The fine's 200 grand.
Multiply by 10. Right.
Yeah, but why the dude is? Am I going to be afraid to have a beer next to this guy in a bar downstairs? I doubt it. What is he going to be in jail? What's the point of that?
Chief, well, I'll tell you what the point of it is. Which
I understand. At some point, I mean, if people have the dough. Yeah, I get it.
The point is, rich people are going to jail, actually, in terms of the damage to their lifestyle is actually greater than putting, say, a homeless person in jail. It might be an upgrade.
Well, yeah, I get it.
Okay. Well, okay. So, you know, jail is the great equalizer, just like a firearm is between a 200-pound thug and a 90-pound.
But I think we could be a little more inventive.
Well, but the problem...
The Blagojevich situation...
But, Chief, the problem is this. The NVIDIA CEO guy and the Trump's son, okay, who are getting this information and trading on it, Oh, by the way,
they're buying companies on it, for God's sake.
Well, duh. Yeah. By the way, that's supposed to be illegal. Okay, you throw Trump's son in jail, and all of a sudden, some of this stuff might change.
I'm not a big fan of making examples of people, because you know what? It doesn't work.
No, it has to. It's the certain. But here's the thing. You brought up a very interesting point, which I've brought up before as well, which is that if the odds of getting caught are 10%, and the profit from doing it is $10,000, then the fine has to be more than $100,000 in order to deter the behavior.
If you think, I had a course in this, if you think most thieves are...
If you think that there's a deterrent value...
Well, no, if you take away, you know, rape, murder, those kinds of crimes of passion...
Right.
Most crimes are really crimes...
Are economic. Yes.
So
yes.
If you make the crime, even if you make it neutral, if you steal a case of beer, there's a 25% chance of getting caught, the fine's four cases of beer, the guy's going to say, what's the point of doing it? Right?
The problem is everybody who's a criminal, it underestimates their view of the risk of being caught, okay? And so you can't use the objective risk. You have to use
I get that. We could
put their risk.
But
right.
But to get back to the people, but these laws are written like those. Get back to the employment thing. The laws were written so some people essentially could steal legally. There was no revenue test. I mean, if you had a
No, I know. All I'm pointing out is that we see this kind of behavior out of the within the system. The universally, every single hospital and medical center in the United States commits 100 felonies.
Right, hey, can we until Joel piles in? Can we totally change things here? Because one thing I want to ask you, because we have labor numbers coming out on Friday.
Yes, we do.
Last night I was reading an article, and of course I lost it. It had to do with how people are stunned that the consumers' purchases are staying in, and how the consumer and retail sales are hanging in there. And
No, they're not.
Okay, but where I'm kind of going with this is that with Larissa and the savings rate, if everything goes up by 20% and I need to buy some stuff, I'm probably spending the same amount I did last year, but I'm not getting anywhere with it. I mean, how does that number, the number is grossly, well, I guess it's a number that's a number, but if the savings rate last month was down to 2.6%, which is the lowest since in the middle of COVID.
Right.
Now, and the credit cards are going up. So you really almost, if you're any kind of a reporter, you need to put those three numbers together before you draw a conclusion. And yet, why does nobody, do people not, are we just unusual people in that we know that, or do other people know it and they just, you know, it's sort of like, you know, Scott Bessent, and I didn't listen to the whole thing with Maria, but he said something, the snippet they had on the radio had to do with, at the end of the year, the high prices, people are going to look at their wealth and see how much better they're doing. So obviously he's talking to people that own stocks.
Well, yeah, which is, you know, yeah.
And so, I mean, this is all a question of, but when the information is just lobbed out there in a way where, look at retail people are spending as much as last year, or actually a little more, you must be doing good. Please don't make that conclusion for me or anybody that I know. The conclusions are what, are people doing this on purpose? Of course they're doing it on purpose. But the people doing it don't seem like they're smart enough. Who are they doing it for, I guess, is my question.
Well, I don't know who they're doing it for, other than the fact that every crooner on the boob tube and in the media is of course, interested in pumping the outcome in the asset markets, right?
Yeah.
And yet, if you look at the reality of it, for example, in housing here, the number of people attempting to puke up rental cabins at 2021 prices, when everybody else was locked down and we were the only ones that were open, And then taking that, you know, that revenue and put a multiple on it and say, okay, you know, that's a good deal, is astounding. And, oh, by the way, they're not selling. Gee, go figure, because now Asheville's back open, and if you prefer green-haired hippie to redneck and hillbilly, then you've gone back there, because that's the environment.
I'm going to guess you're going to the redneck place.
Well, I live in the redneck place, right? I'm more comfortable here than in a place like Asheville, so that I live here.
Would you be comfortable in like the Redneck Riviera?
I lived in the Redneck Riviera for 20 years.
And you lived in the Mississippi Gulf?
No, we used to call the Florida Panhandle, the western end of the Florida Panhandle, its pet name is the Redneck Riviera.
Oh, I thought it was...
And by the way, it is, because it's basically... Or the other one is Lower Alabama.
Maybe that was one of my... The guy that... here's the story. The guy that I shared a spot with in the OEX for 20 years, because it was a big spot. The two of us could be there if we needed to be, but in the morning... He would go, and then if he made money, he'd go play basketball at 10 and never come back, and I'd show up at 10 and spend the rest of the day. So it was interesting. But his parents had a place, I don't know if I mentioned this before. I think he was in Biloxi, so he called that the Redneck Riviera. And there was a beach, you know, some stuff, a road, a parking lot, and his parents, you know, were 10 flat or whatever, 10 high-rise or whatever. And all of a sudden, they had one of the hurricanes, whales right in there, right? And the place is gone. There was like a, might not have been a, you know, a huge building, because there was a slab, so maybe it was like a four story or something. All that was left was the slab. He says to me, "Hey, Chief, what happened to the TV? where is all this stuff?" Nobody found like anything, right? So of course the insurance company said it was. Which is the one you get paid for? You get paid for the wind and not the water or whatever it is.
Right.
But nobody was there. The place was evacuated. But whatever the insurance company said, no, it wasn't the wind, it was the water.
It was the water, right?
Whatever. It was like 5 years later, they got like 40% of the dough and never rebuilt or anything. But he used to call that the Redneck Riviera. But anyway.
By the way, Joel's up, okay. So I'll...
I'm not so sure about if Kenny's in route to being on the New York Stock Exchange if you want to hang around. Joel, how are you? Joel, unmute thyself.
You guys have the mute trick on your show?
No, I suppose we could mute you if we wanted to, but why would we?
Good morning, Chief. You know how you doing? How you doing?
You know, since you axed, we actually have a dump machine, because when we take calls over the air. So we actually ran an 8-second delay, and if you said something we don't want out there, we could hit the dump machine, and we can wipe that piece out.
So you've been taking calls? You've been taking outside calls?
Oh, way back in the day we did.
Oh.
But you know, what happened is we have this very expensive call machine where we could have five people waiting and everything. We used to do this all the time. But when all our stuff that came into the office is now digital, the digital doesn't play very well with that machine.
Hmm.
So it's because it's an analog.
Hmm.
But it's a real nice machine. So yeah, so we couldn't... It's like if you guys want to take calls, I don't know if you do on your show, I think more you take text messages and so forth. If you want to take calls now, you have to get a machine that can play with the digital. So our phone machine was designed for old phone lines. So it's, you know, it's 16 years old. So
we thought about doing that too back in the day, you know, because like sports, like aren't we like the stocks and jocks, right?
Yeah.
It's sports. Sports radio, isn't that famous for Jim Rome?
Did you ever listen to those guys? The guys that are spectacular at it. There was a guy, I think he might have just died. It was Tommy Williams, African-American guy. T-Dub was his name. He was one of the nice, I met him a couple of things, one of the nicest men. But he was a master at this. He would do 6 hours at night by himself. And you sit there and go, you and I, as much as we like being on your show, my show, and each other's shows, that's a haul. But one night I actually was, I don't know where I was somewhere, but I was driving home at like 1 in the morning, and I kick on T-Dub. And sure enough, he gets on there, and he's got the nicest voice, and everybody likes him. And he goes, you know, I think Frank Thomas is probably the greatest ball player ever in Chicago. Now, Frank Thomas is a great ball player. What do you guys think? And all of a sudden, the phones light up. And every guy's got a story. They end up talking about Ernie Banks. They end up talking about Ryan. For an hour and a half, I'm coming in from South Bend or someplace. Listen to the guy. I mean, but he made the people the show. Because everybody had an opinion. Everybody had a reason why their opinion was okay. The next guy would either agree or disagree. It flowed for an hour and a half like better than anything I've ever done. I mean, he was a master at it. Just pick up a subject, people start calling in, and all of a sudden you got a conversation. And everybody enjoyed it. And it was easy to drive. You're listening, and time flew. You know, it was. So those guys were good at that. Anyway, phone calls used to be. The problem is, you do get the crank ones. You do need the dump button. When Jan and I were on the score, we had a machine that went right to the score, right? So the producer was on the other end. Unfortunately, we didn't have Ricky. Was on the other end. And our guy's name was Cyrus. And so Cyrus says, Joe's calling in. He wants to talk about the S&P. So he gets on there. And all of a sudden he goes, well, I said I was going to talk about the S&P, but I really want to talk about the N's and the J's. And John's going, Cyrus, where are you? It got out. And you know what was weird about it? The guy was talking so fast, thinking he was going to get dumped, that he ran out of breath. He stopped himself. But Cyrus must have gone to the men's room or something. He never dumped the guy. And all of a sudden, we get over to the Board of Trade, back when we were all over the traders and stuff, and Jan and I go work out after the show. Of course, everybody in the locker room listened to us on the way in. We were on from 5 to 6. And they were cheering us as we finally got our first crank call. It means we made it in the world. people used to call in crank calls. I mean, you had to have a dump mud because people were live. They came on. They were live. If they started to say something, somebody had their finger, literally had their finger on a button. See, if you ever ran on real radio, this is the stuff you had to put up with.
Yeah, that one. Oh,
so
what do you
make of this? What do you make of this? What do you think of stuff like? There's no top on this stuff. Look at his. Mike, did you see this Hewlett Packard last night? The sleepiest stock on earth was up 30%. Now it's back down a bunch. It was up 20-something. Now it's up 12. But still, what do you make of this? I mean, NVIDIA's popped down another, $300 billion in market cap in 2 days? I mean, here's one for you. I was going to ask Carl, but if he comes back in, I will ask him again. That somebody here, I'll find a situation. Who is it? Stock market did something. This is from Morgan Stanley, I believe. The dot-com bubble, and I'm not going to say your age, but you remember this. Just 20, on Friday, when the index hit a record close, only 20 of the S&P member stocks closed at a record close, even though the index did. The last time that happened was like 2 days before the crash in March of 2000.
Don't say that C word.
Yeah, I mean, that's you look at this kind of stuff, and you can't trade on this, but it is pretty interesting, isn't it? I'll read this to you. The S&P 500 closed at a record the last trading day of May, but only a handful of stocks, focused mostly in the AI area, hit their own all-time highs. The strange occurrence echoes what happened at the top of the dot-com bubble 26 years ago. On Friday, just 20 of the index members hit a record. Of those 20, just 7 were not related to artificial intelligence. Mike Harnett at Bank of America pointed out in a note to end last week that it was just 20 stocks hit new highs at the very top of the internet bubble in March of 2000. It doesn't mean I'm buying puts today, but it is interesting, isn't it? How narrow it's become. What do you make of that, Joe?
You know what, Chief? We've seen the story before. Right?
Yeah.
The narrow, the breadth, the rotation, and market just keeps going. So
I'm not sure
what's going to turn it, but, I mean, you just better be in those stocks, right?
Well, yeah.
Or not short them. I mean, I think that's the only
Well, what, way. I mean, there is a, and again, I ponder this all the time. That's why I have you guys on to get opinions and, people write in from the listeners. What is... We're seeing stuff, by anybody's stretch, absurdly high. Micron is now 1,050 this morning, and they're $51 a share in revenue. So we're talking 21 times revenue, which is twice what somebody's was, and we're in a dark bomb. Don't say sell Micron or anything. But I also know that if the federal government, with our new Fed chairman, why we needed a new one, because Powell's pouring so much money in there, if we continue to grow the money supply at a 12% a month rate, the market's going to go even higher, because we're going to end up being the next Weimar Republic. Now, I don't know which is which. Is somebody going to wake up in Washington? Is the inflation pressure going to be on so much that they're actually going to give a crap in Washington? Or are they so hung up with the people with money, the stuff that is stocks are going up, that which is the bigger driver of the economy right now, the people that are hurting or the people that are making out on it? Obviously, the people that are making out on it. When politically does that change? And this is not a Democrat-Republican thing. When does that change? When does somebody care more for somebody who's getting gagged by the inflation than the guy who owns Micron? I mean, that to me is the $58 question, and I don't know where the answer is. I mean, do you even think that's the right question? I think it is.
Joel? Maybe the guy should own Micron.
Well, yeah, I'm saying. I mean,
now,
I mean, you know, the guy who owns, you know, we have people here. If you own 5,000 shares of Chevron, there's only so much you can bitch about gas prices being high, right? I think you made more on your 5,000 shares of Chevron than you did on paying in the gas, don't you?
Yeah. You know what, Chief? Politics is not my strong suit, so I'm just...
Well, mine neither, but it seems like it is the market now. I mean, certainly in terms of monetary policy, it is the market.
Yeah. Well, the money's going to keep flowing into the market, inflation's going to keep going higher, and the same stocks are going to be leading us, and, you know, you just have to accept what the information the market's giving you and move forward until the narrative changes. And
well, you know,
both you and I wish we knew when that was going
to
happen.
It's funny, we have a lot of Microsoft, and today I'll be able to fix everything because it's down a little bit. But when it was trading like 410, I said, you know, this stock is going to go up. It's one that hasn't. You know, I don't usually pick individual stocks. So I did something at like the 430 level, 427.5. Got it in 2 days. It blew through 427.5 like dinner through a goose. I was bullish. I was bullish.
It's coming in a little bit today. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see whether it's just an oversold pop or the tide has turned. But got to hop, Chief.
All right, buddy.
Always enjoy being.
Hey, I really enjoyed.
See you next week.
I really enjoyed Friday with your partner.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Catch you next week. Thanks, Chief.
Do we have Kenny or are we back to Carl?
Yes, we do.
We have Kenny. Hey, what's up, buddy? How are you?
I apologize. The long guy's right outside my window naturally blowing stuff all over the place. So if you hear it, I apologize.
That's not a problem. You know, a guy like you, you probably have 10 long guys.
We should be done in about a minute and a half.
Or, you got the yacht cleaners over too?
Wait, hold on, because I can't freaking hear you.
I'm saying, do you have the yacht cleaners there today too, along with the long guys?
No, just the long guy. They cut the lawn, and now they're blowing all this stuff all over the place. I don't, you know what I mean? But it always seems that every time I need to get on the phone to do something, there's always the long guy there with the blower. Anyway, so I was listening to your conversation, and yes, the market continues to march new highs. NVIDIA, you know, carried the load yesterday after Jensen made that announcement at some conference in Taipei that he was talking about. NVIDIA, you know, bringing agentic AI now into reality. So ChatGPT goes from, you know, answering, researching data and answering an email to actually writing the email, writing the data, making the appointments, and, you know, doing everything your assistant used to do for you, used to do for yourself. And so the place exploded, right? Which I'm not sure why anyone's surprised. We've been talking about it for a while, but it continued to explode. What's interesting, though, is while you look at the indexes and they look like they closed at new highs, and they did, the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ, the bulk of the names really ended up closing lower, right? There were only two sectors out of the 11 sectors that closed higher, were tech and energy. Everything else closed lower yesterday, which is kind of interesting because if you look at the index, you go, oh, wow, look at that. But you have to look kind of underneath the surface to see what's really going on. And I think that's partly to your point when you just said, you know, in the last segment, is when is it gonna pull back? I think it's gonna start. RSIs across the indexes show overbought. They've shown overbought for, you know, a couple of weeks, which all that means is at some point it's going to give out and the markets will retreat, which I don't think is a bad thing. It needs to shake the branches. It needs to pull back a little bit because, once again, it's just gone parabolic. And we know that trees don't grow to the sky, and at some point, you know, the ridiculousness has to stop. But to your point about they keep adding money supply, money supply, money supply, when's it going to stop? Well, I hope that Kevin Warsh comes in and he's going to be, you know, the adult in the room and says, okay, this has to stop, right? You got to shrink the balance sheet. You got to stop with the money supply. We're way over our skis. And we'll see. I hope that's what happens. That's what he said he was going to do. Let's just see if he does it.
Well, when you have the amount of credit that is piling in, and Hal's the guy, he'll be on later. I'm sure he keeps track of these statistics. Almost all the growth in reserves and in credit is in, God, what's the group? It's a non-bank financial institutions, which essentially means brokerage firms.
Yeah.
And the amount of, in the last 4 weeks, we've got $400 billion, $500 billion in buying power just in Micron. And you can borrow another $400 billion on that.
Listen, I hear you.
Yeah, but I don't see how. I mean, last month, actually, the money supply was up on almost a 12% annual rate, which is egregiously inflationary. Yet I think the balance sheet actually went down. So the amount of money that's being created on its own by what's going on in the market means that normally you would say to a Fed chairman who said, we're gonna shrink the balance sheet. I mean, he's not drinking it fast enough. He needs to drain water out of this pool as fast as water is coming in the pool, and I think that's a challenge right now.
I hear you.
How many people even know that, though?
I'm not sure how many people know that, actually, you know? But it's going to have to happen. It has to happen.
What do you make of this? You know this guy, Tobias Burns? He's a CNBC guy. Did you know him when you were over there?
No, I don't know who that is.
He's the guy who just wrote this article about the exact same thing happened in March of 2000. The market hit new highs with only 20 stocks hitting a high.
Yeah,
same thing happened Friday.
Look what happened in the March of 2000. It was a dot-com bubble and burst, right?
Well, but also, one of the reasons for that, I mean, and I think behind the scenes, like you're always looking under the hood of what the market is, which is what's great about you. Back then, the Fed was pouring money in because of Y2K, so the last, I'm going to say, 5 to 10 to 15% of the bubble the Fed created by pushing money and thinking that nothing was going to work on Y2K. So what happened to come in January, back in those days, the people who did that in the Fed were logic enough to say, well, nothing bad happened, we should take it out. But now, nobody is going to allow anybody to take it out because nobody wants their stocks to go down.
Right.
So it's a different. Those guys, the Fed probably created the last piece of the bubble and probably also created the crack in the bubble. But now they're not going to do that. So what's the. When you say the stocks are going to come down a little bit, and maybe they should, or whatever, what's going to cause that? These guys are never going to do that. They're never going to. Given what the administration is doing, no matter what it is, they're not going to accept a drop in the market. It, to the extent that they don't have to, or they can avoid it. Which the Fed back then felt, hey, the market went up too much, it goes down a little bit, so what? But not, nobody feels that way anymore, do they?
No, I don't think they feel that way anymore.
No. So I'm saying we're in a whole different world now economically, in my mind, from my history of, you know, markets and money supply and market movement, going back to, you know, Weimar, Argentina, Turkey. I don't know what to make of this. That's why I keep asking you guys, basically.
Well, I hear you. I don't think we're going to the Weimar. Do I think that, you know, clearly, you know, we've gone too far? Yes, but I've been saying it for a while, right? They've kept rates too low for too long, which created this, and then they keep adding money to the system. It only exacerbates it. They keep telling you they're cutting rates because the economy is slumping. The economy is not slumping. Look at yesterday's economic data. ISM manufacturing ticks higher. prices paid ticks higher, right? So that keeps the pressure up on inflation. So, you know, I think the whole rate cut narrative, while it may still be on the table, I don't think it's really on the table. I actually think, again, that they're leaning more towards a hike. Now, the market's not pricing in a hike or a cut. It's pricing in kind of steady. But I think if the data continues to do what it's going to do, there's going to be no other option than to publicly discuss a rate hike. And that should put the brakes on it a little bit. And I think it needs to happen. I hate to say it as a wealth advisor, but I think it needs to happen. Stocks need to, you know, they need to consolidate, trade off a little bit, shake the branches. It has to happen.
What do you make of, and you don't do this, what do you make of the people in our industry, because I guess we're all in somewhat, you much more than me, in the news industry, what do you make of people that are essentially, I'll use the term, moronic, and keep talking about how good the economy is because retail sales are still someplace? Well, if everything's 5% or 8% or 10% higher than last year, how could they not be? How do you not compare, like, the lowest savings rate in, like, forever, last month, except for 1 month in COVID, the lowest savings rate and credit cards going up? Of course people are spending. Everything they buy costs more. I mean, why?
Well, that's right. Everything they buy costs more, correct.
So from a gross number, you could say everybody's healthy. From an underneath the blanket number, everybody's screwed. Right?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I'm not laughing, but yes, that's about right, right? Because it continues to, they're paying more for the stuff, and they're going to continue to pay more, right? Because prices continue to go higher. And so they'll continue to pay more.
I mean, in theory, if gas went to $50 a gallon and somebody's job was driving a cab, I guess he's paying as much as last year. I guess he's doing good because he's spending as much as... No, he's not. What do you think of Marvel? Did you get your Marvel yesterday?
I did not buy any Marvel. No, I don't own it. Well, I don't own it directly. I own it through either the Triple Qs or the Ives, right? IVES, which is the Dan Ives ETF. And MU I own through the DRAM ETF. I don't own it individually, but I own the memory chips through the DRAM ETF.
How could a guy like you, hanging in New York Stock Exchange, hanging in all the different, the big shows with all the big shots, how do you not get these calls?
It's not that I don't get the calls, but it's how I decide to allocate the money, right? I will say, the MU trade just got away from me like it did a lot of people. Like last year, it suddenly took off and then it went parabolic. And so I was always going, no, it's got to come in, It just never came in, right? So legitimately, I missed that.
But do you believe this HPE last night up 30%?
No, and it's up, right.
It's only up.
I have to actually read the story. I haven't read the story yet.
Well, it's another thing. They're going to be included in something. But the part that...
Wasn't the HP part of the whole NVIDIA story yesterday?
I think so.
The agentic AI, it was all part of that, right? MU was there, NVIDIA was there, ARM was there. HP was there. A bunch of those stocks actually took off yesterday on the back of that news.
Well, and I think, you know, it's a shot for me, and it's a, you know, people will be pissed, I suppose. It's a shot against this administration. I, for one, am looking around as best I can for the next one that Trump's going to say he likes, gives them money, and they're going to be the next chosen firm. I mean, we're becoming, you know, Germany. I mean, there's going to be some stocks that are favored. I never dreamed IBM was going to get, they got $1 billion from government to do something, right? I mean, look at Dell, for God's sake. It was up $116 in one day. I mean, because all of a sudden they, you know, the guy dropped the big bag. Now, you know, Kevin says that they're an American producer, but I don't think that has anything to do with anything. I mean, if you're paying homage, you're being selected. This is an America that I've never, not that something like this hadn't happened, you know, once in a while, but I've never seen anything like this.
No, I agree. I think it's, it doesn't feel dot-com-ish in the sense that there's a crash coming, but it feels dot-com-ish in the sense that I think there's just way too much euphoria. And that's just me, which doesn't mean that I'm selling my tech stuff. Just means I'm not buying any more up here, right? I'm kind of looking at other places to put money to work because I do think the tech is stretched, right? It's the NASDAQ is well into overbought territory, as is the S&P, by the way. And so that just raises a caution flag for me in terms of, you know, if I'm going to allocate money where, and if I'm not leaving it in cash, you know, is an investment decision. So I might just wait and see how this all plays out.
But how do you? But if you think that, you know, my thing always was from this is from the dot bomb crash. Once you get 10, 12 times revenue in a mature company, things are getting kind of high because it's pretty hard for a company that big to double.
I mean,
so that's my. But I don't know that of all the stocks here that I think are overvalued by that basis, I think every one of them is undervalued if they become, you know, all of a sudden the government takes a piece and they're a preferred provider for the next 10 years. I mean, nobody's overvalued if you're going to get that.
Well, you're right. Nobody's overvalued if you're going to give that. That's correct.
And that's what's being given out. So, I mean, even though, like I said, we have a lot of Microsoft here at the firm that we've managed for people, and I'm going to say that I wouldn't have a, even though I think, you know, the stock has not performed that well in the last year or so, and it's probably fairly valued here, let's say, if all of a sudden, you know, they get, Trump's kid buys into Microsoft, that stock could be 600. Why not? It was 520, right?
Easily,
yeah.
Right?
So, I mean, I'm being real careful with selling calls and things here because I don't want to be caught in the way of one of these. That's no way to trade. What the hell? We could just as easily go, you know, go to the track and try and pick the winner, for God's sake.
Yeah, right. You could.
So where are you? Where are you this week? Are you in New York?
Well, no, I'm in Florida. I'm actually going to. I'm not going to New York because I'm going away next week. I told you I'm going to be out for about a month in terms of between vacation and going up to the Cape for the summer, getting myself settled. So today's the last time I'll talk to you until July because
okay.
Then I'm going to be away.
So you're settling in at the Cape. What are you doing? Buying a restaurant?
Yeah. No. We have a family home up there, and so we'll go up there. My wife and I'll go up there for about 6 weeks towards the end of June through the end of July. We're going away on vacation next week on a trip that we've had planned. So we're going to be
good for you.
A couple of weeks, and then when I get back, I'm immediately going up to the Cape. So you know, and then I'll just work from the Cape like I did, like I always do. But I want to get myself settled up there.
Well, if you decide you want to call in 1 week, just let me know.
Yeah, no. Well, I will. Well, if I call in before, but otherwise, I'm off until I think I gave you the date yesterday. That's that second Tuesday in July, like the 6th
okay.
or whatever that Tuesday is. So yeah. So I'll see you then. You know, and then we'll talk. We'll catch up and see where the market's been.
So I hear you didn't show up for Maria. She had to go get Trump as a sub.
She had to go get Trump for a sub. Yeah, that's what she did.
What? Hey, Trumpy, McKenny's not in here. Would you mind coming on for a while?
You're nuts.
Take care, buddy, and talk
right,
to you when we
you.
Will. Do we have Professor Hal?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
All right, just the guy I want to talk to.
Yeah, I've been looking at some stuff while you guys have been talking. I tweeted it out if anybody wants to look at the charts I created.
What do you make of the savings rate? What do you make of like all this stuff that we've been talking about?
Well, what I find interesting is I got an email from you guys a couple days ago about M2. So I updated my quadratic trend.
Yep.
And it's really interesting.
No, when you do that, you're going off the weeklies on the quadratic trend, correct?
Yeah, I'm going off the weekly, yeah.
But the weeklies come in, or just to let everybody know, you don't get the weeklies in advance of the monthlies. You get the weeklies in arrears of the monthlies.
Yeah. So I've been tracking this quadratic trend using the weeklies, and it did increase 5.2% from last year. But the interesting thing, I think, is the increase from last month is actually negative, but the expected increase in a year from now is only going to be about 3%. So I have M2 growth slowing and probably coming to a linear growth trend maybe. So that's good news.
Why is that so different than what I'm looking at?
Well, because I'm doing the weekly.
But I mean,
and I'm looking at a quadratic trend of it. I'm instead of taking the balancing ball, I'm basically averaging the height of the ball with a quadratic trend.
All right. Well, I tried to, of course, you know.
I don't think you want to use the ups and downs from month to month or from quarter to quarter or year to year.
But last
month, that out a little bit.
Okay, but last month, I mean, this is ways to look at this, and you know, back when the money supply was a big deal. I mean, duh, you looked at what happened the last month and you multiplied it by 12. You didn't worry about what happened a year ago. And the last month, which where we are, last month is really April, right? So we're a month in arrears.
Yeah.
So if you look March to April, that annualized rate is 11.9. The month before, which is I think what you're picking up, was actually pretty slow. So if you look at those 2 months and multiply it by six, you get a 5.9 annual rate, which, you know, is bad, but it's not near as bad as 11.9. But if you go back 3 months, take the 3 month total and multiply it by four, you're talking about a 6.7 rate, which anybody who thinks that's fighting inflation, I mean, you know, you got a tumor in your nose. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, So pick any number in there. I mean, my instinct is to look at the last month because of what's happened to the market.
Well, what I'm looking at is the expected increase over the course of a year. And a year ago, that's from a quadratic trend. So it's smoothing out the ups and downs from month to month. A year ago, that was running at about 8 or 9%. A 2 years ago, it was running at about 10%, what we expect it to be in a year. Right now, I have it at about 3%. And I think why that is because there's been a slowdown in the growth of lending to non-depository financial institutions.
Well, that's going to pop right back up the last 2 weeks, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, right now I have lending growth rate from the beginning of the year 2025. I have it kind of stabilizing at about 42% over those months. And that growth rate has been flat for about 4 months. It's been flat at about 40% from January of 2025. Now, the interesting thing is there hasn't been no other changes really in like loans and leases for bank credit in general, consumer loans, residential real estate loans. However, what I am seeing is commercial and industrial loans. It was flat all the way through about November of 2026 from the beginning of 2025. Sorry, from January 2025 to about November of 2025, it was actually shrinking if you account for inflation, that sector of lending.
I'm curious.
But, I know you always... But since then, since the end of 2025 through the latest month that I have, commercial and industrial loan growth looks like it is 10% higher, roughly, from the start of 2025. So you're seeing a huge increase, finally, in commercial and industrial lending.
Okay.
And it didn't start showing up until the beginning of 2026.
All right.
So if you're a supply sider, that's probably good news because the banks are now making these loans, these industrial loans, these commercial loans.
All right, but you were
that's a shoot of hope, a green shoot of hope.
Okay, but you were talking about the some of this. I'm really wondering what you're looking at in some of these numbers. To be honest with you.
Well, I have it on my Twitter account if you want to look at it.
I understand it, but I'm looking here at the margin loans on stock, which is last month is the one you were talking about was out of control.
Oh, no, level wise, it's way up there, but its growth rate has been moderating.
Last month, it was
growth
up,
in that has been moderating.
It was up 6.4% last month in one.
Well,
month.
But if you look at the growth rate from the start of 2025, it soars, but then it's leveling off in the last 3 or 4 months.
All right. Well, given what
or the, maybe the last two
right,
months,
given what the market's doing and the growth in buying power in some of these stocks that have these billions of shares outstanding.
Oh, I agree. I think the levels are unbelievable. But all I'm saying is the growth rate in that non-depository financial lending, growth rate seems to be moderating at a very high level.
Okay, but you're the mathematician, all right?
Yeah.
You're the man. You the man, as they said in, what was it, Major League? No, Bull Durham. You the man. If you go up from, let's take November to December 2023, it's up $40 billion.
Now, you got to be really careful. Okay. There's some jumps in that series in the Fed because they redefined what that kind of lending is. There was this huge jump.
Margin lending has been margin lending since...
Oh, I thought you were talking about non-deposits.
No. I'm saying... So, yeah, you're talking... I mean, I'm trying to find a...
The levels are off the charts, Tom. I agree.
No, I'm saying just in terms of the math.
Yeah.
You're talking about the rate is moderating, but okay, in November to December 2023, we're up $40 billion.
It's crazy.
Okay, yeah. I just picked 2 months here, on a 660 base. Okay, so the next month went from 700 to 701. All right, so not much of it. So that's that's a pretty good percentage. But last month, it's up $80 billion. I mean, that's a 6.3% rate off a massive high to start with.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, oh, yeah, the levels are off the charts. I agree with you 100%.
Now, whether that's half a 1% less than in 23, it's $80 billion. It's real dull. Yeah. I mean, this month, I can't believe how high it's going to be with some of these individual stocks up this high. I mean, we're talking...
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Micron is up roughly 600 points.
Well, they got levels-wise, it is unfreaking believable. But in the weekly M2, my expectation for M2 growth in a year is only about 3% a year from now. A year from now, I expect M2 to only have grown 3% over the course of that year, that future year. Okay. Now, why is that? Because the growth at these really high levels of lending to non-depository financial institutions appears to be moderating at a very high level. So I think that's contributing to the softening of what I expect M2 to be in a year.
Well, I hope from your lips to God's ear, because I'm looking at one stock.
That could mean maybe we're entering a recession, or maybe it's there's not as much lending. Lending to these non-depository financial institutions isn't growing as rapidly as it once was.
Right,
it's still growing rapidly.
My point is, last month was an outlier how much it grew. Yeah. And I'm saying, Micron, I'm going to be nasty here and say, from basically the end of March, where the stock was, say, 350, it's now 1,050.
Yeah.
Now that, fine, it's a great company, whatever. You're a genius for getting involved. You know, I'm sure we got people in the queue, so we're
Micron,
involved.
Micron, isn't that an Idaho company?
Oh, I don't know.
There used to be a huge Micron factory in Boise.
I
think J.R. Simplot used to own, like, was probably the founder or like a major investor in the company.
I have a story about that, by the way.
Everybody knows who J.R. Simplot is, yeah, right?
He's the guy who makes potatoes from McDonald's.
Yeah, he makes the fertilizers too, I think. He had a big fertilizer plant, I think, in Pocatello, Idaho.
Let me tell you a Simplot story, but let me finish this thought first. All right, from what I'm doing now, Hal, and I shouldn't be, because all it does is aggravate myself, is when you talk about how this is settling down, all right, since March, stock is up roughly $700. All right, so that's fine. Maybe it's worth it. I'm not, I don't know enough. They might have 15 contracts now. It might be worth more. So I'm not saying just sell it. But they have 1.1 billion shares outstanding. So that's roughly $800 billion now that is of wealth that is on.
Oh, yeah. The stock market's over. It's bubble territory.
What I'm saying is,
I agree.
We have some Micron stock here. I'm sure every other brokerage firm, a lot bigger than us. You can now take that $700 billion. $800 billion, and you can borrow another,
$800 billion,
in a minute. All you gotta do, if you got $100,000 in buying power here, you do is call my brother up and say, buy me another $200,000 worth of Micron, and we're doing it. Now, we don't have clients like that, but if we did, that's what we would do, because that's how Robin and all these other places, they make their money because they charge you interest on that. It's not that we don't charge interest, RBC does, but we have so many few people that are on margin that it's nothing for us. But those places, that's where they make all their money. Where do you think a brokerage firm makes money? They make it on margin interest.
Yeah.
Okay, and so, but I'm saying, so the Fed, they better roll that balance sheet down so damn fast just to compete with this increase in money supply just coming from this industry.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even, I'm saying they have to be an all-out, that balance sheet better rain down like rain on a 4th of July if they expect to keep this anywhere near even. I don't see how they can.
Yeah, interesting thing about the Fed rolling off its balance sheet, letting bonds mature, is that when they purchase a bond, they have to invent the money to purchase it, essentially.
Yeah.
Right? But when they let it mature, they're going to get cash from Treasury.
No, they're going to get cash, they give the cash back to Treasury.
Yeah, they can do two things with that cash. They can give it back to Treasury, or they can use the money they get from the Treasury to buy.
You know what? No, I don't think
more bonds,
they.
Right?
I don't think when it comes off their balance sheet, which essentially is made up money in the first place.
Yeah.
This comes off the balance sheet, but I think the interest they make on everything, that goes back to the Treasury, because they're always talking about how much income they give back to the.
Yeah, I think when they let it mature,
it just rolls up. It just rolls
they
up.
They either disappear the money.
Yeah, it just disappears.
Yeah. They either disappear the money, or they can take the proceeds from letting the Treasury
the interest
value
they make on it. That's the number. You actually haven't heard this in a couple of years, but there's always some big smiling Fed chairman that says we just gave a $6 billion check back to the government with the interest they essentially made on the government debt they owe. So they give them their interest back. Hey, you want to hear my Simplot story? It's kind of sort of a sleazy story about brokerage firms. Evidently, like you say, I think Simplot owned a boatload of Micron. This is back, I don't know if it's a .com, it was way back. And Micron has been...
Yeah, it was like the middle 90s.
Yeah,
late
90s. Well, so Micron has been the poster child of flying way up and flying way down many times. That's why I just don't trust the stock, because it was it was $95 when we were given lectures in the Bahamas, and this is right after the .com thing, and it went down to $6. Anyway, so Simplot owns all this Micron, and he's got some on margin, right? So it's going down. And I forget what firm it was. It was Morgan or one of the big guys. So they say to Simplot, you got to sell the stock. And they say, we'll take you out at like $9 or $9.50 or something. This is how sleazy these firms are. Because they trade against their own clients. I mean, I don't know if they still do it as much as they did. So Simplot goes, okay, and he pukes it out to like Morgan or whoever it was. I mean, it's one of those firms, so don't go short in Goldman Sachs because I'm telling this story. They immediately come out with a buy recommendation on Micron, and 2 days later it's like 12.
Wow.
They took the poor guy out at like 9.5, they have no heart at all.
Yeah.
I mean, if they can screw a client, they'll screw a client.
Yeah.
And the guys...
Well, it's a cartelized, heavily regulated industry. It's cartelized by the fact that it's not really your savings. You know, the money you put into these accounts is not really yours, because if you need it, you can't pull it out. It's like it's a cartelized, monopolized institution, and the government goes out of its way to protect those institutions, in my opinion.
Well,
and the bigger they are, the more protection they get.
I wish my buddy Dr. J was here, because his DPM traded Micron, and he knew this whole story.
Yeah.
I think he might have actually talked to Simplot, because he traded the Micron options. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the minute they took the guy out, they put out a recommendation on it.
That's crazy. Yeah.
But I mean, they don't see any problem with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, doing all this research on the banking rule changes, and then listening to Jamie Dimon yesterday about the Clarity Act, I think Jamie Dimon's problem with the Clarity Act is it's going to make his bank operations more difficult, because he's going to face more competition. That's basically what I got from
there. Careful when you put Jamie Dimon, the smiling Jamie Dimon, into the good guy column.
Oh, I'm not putting him in the good guy column. I think he's really worried about having to face competition if the Clarity Act were to... Now, I'm not saying what the Clarity Act does.
All right, explain to everybody what the Clarity Act does.
Well, I'm not sure what it exactly does, but it's a regulation regarding stable coin, or like cryptocurrency. And I think what it does is it allows like the stable coins, hopefully I'm not butchering this, but allows stable coins to be like part of deposits somehow. And he's pushing back on it, because I think he is afraid of the competition that's coming.
I think he's afraid the stuff isn't worth anything.
Yeah. Well, maybe, but these cartelized industries, the CEOs of these cartelized industries, that one reason why they love the cartels, because they don't have to face the competition they would have to face otherwise, because of the rules and regulations.
Carl and I were complaining back and forth about laws that aren't enforced. There actually is a law or a regulation, or whatever you want to call it, about how big a bank can be in terms of what percentage of deposits they can have. And I think two or three of them, since there's not very many big ones left, I think they've been over that number for years, and they never told them to break up.
And the law, the government's very selective in its enforcement of the rules, just like the NCAA, right? So, you know.
Did you watch the NBA game the other night? Are you an NBA guy?
Man, I turned off Saturday's game. There was a couple things that happened in the game, like Wimby's being like guarded by somebody 6'4", and he's standing out 5 feet beyond the 3-point line for some reason. And I'm like, I can't watch this. I turned it off. I ended up watching the Fever. But the Fever got blown out by 20 points, so I think I watched an episode of From, a really cool horror series on MGM Plus.
Did you think the game was fixed? I did.
I got to the point where I just couldn't watch it anymore. I fired the NBA that day. I couldn't watch it.
I ran across three or four YouTube things where they're talking about how the NBA is so dying to see San Antonio in the finals because this guy's the new face of the NBA.
Yeah, I just can't watch a player who is 7'6". Who's being guarded against by a guy that's 6'4", and he's 4 or 5 feet beyond the 3-point line. I can't watch that, Tom. I just can't. I watched Tim Duncan.
Well, the guy's not going to block.
Highlight reel of Tim Duncan or Hakeem Olajuwon. Those dudes can get 100% from 2 feet from the basket if they're being guarded by a 6'4" guy. Just drop step away.
Yeah, but if he goes in there, some other bigger guy. 100%
shots go in.
If he goes in there, a bigger guy is going to guard him. But still, the guy's only going to be 6'10".
Well, but you can force the team to take the 6'4" guy off you, and that's what Jordan would do. If people try to put a short guy up against Jordan, Jordan would put him on the block and just abuse him until the coach took him off and put somebody else in there. And that's what Wimby should be doing. And they don't do that. They just let the guy stand out there 8 feet beyond the 3-point line. Right, wasting an opportunity to get 80% from the field on the low block.
You know how much less work it is out of the 3-point line than it is inside?
Oh, yeah, just shoot up 3-pointers. Just shoot 3-pointers.
I was always, you know, at 6'4", most of the places I played. You go inside and rebound. Well, okay, wait a minute. I kind of like to shoot, too, once in a while.
You know what I do? I get on the low block, and I'd watch film. After film of Adrian Dantley and Hakeem Olajuwon and Michael Jordan, and I could drop step left, I could drop step right, I could fade to the left, I could fade to the right, and then in the meantime, I was always looking to pass, and I could get my shot off on a fadeaway left or a fadeaway right, high above my defender. I was only 6'1", but I could get that fadeaway shot off. It was like a layup in my 20s.
Adrian Dantley.
And I could knock it off the glass and make it every time.
I just played against him at the rack. Adrian Dantley was a spectacular player.
Oh, that guy had the most incredible footwork. It's unbelievable.
He had amazing footwork. He was strong as an ox, and he hit.
And he was not very tall.
He was barely taller than me.
But in the NBA, he was a short power forward.
Well, but he was, I'm going to say, I was 6'4", 6'5 and a half, 6'6 on a maybe on a good day.
When you got brand new shoes,
he also was recruited heavily to play tight end, and he was a real strong guy, and his hands were monsters when he got his hands on. But you know, he would, my stepfather, who didn't know anything about basketball, didn't make him bad, but we'd go to a game, we'd drive down from Chicago to see him a game
I'd go just watch him play.
Well, my stepfather goes, look at there's 10 guys out there, and the ball goes up on a shot. He goes just to the right spot for the rebound, knows just where the ball's coming, and once he gets his hands on it, nobody can pull it away from him. He goes, he's got a sixth sense that nobody else there it has.
He was an incredible ball player.
But he incredible. Was. But now, you look at him now, when he played, when you're talking about a guy who's, a lot of people don't, if you never played ball against people like this, you don't realize how the guys that are that exceptional are amazingly stronger than the other guys.
Yeah.
I mean, he played at, when he was a little chubby when he showed up, for a basketball player, but he'd walk down the street and say the guy was a rock. He was maybe 6'4 and a half, 6'5, 225, and his body fat was like nothing. So when he moved, people moved with him. You don't realize how, Austin Carr probably was the best player I ever saw, when I was a freshman. But he was 15, 20 pounds heavier than anybody guarding him. So when he stepped in, and the guy was on him. The guy went backwards. Then he was able to shoot. You see these?
Well, the key.
You see him today. He's still not a fat guy. I'll bet he's got a 58 coat, Adrian Dantley. Yeah. He's just huge man.
The key to low block play is the waist and down. Yeah. You don't need a chicken wing to do that drop step. You need to put your butt into your defender and then use your leg and your footwork to get that drop step in, either left or right.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Adrian Dantley was really good. His lower body is incredible.
These people that play at these, I mean, look at Charles Barkley. He played at 6'6", 6'7". The round mound of rebound.
I think he was 6'6", because I've seen pictures of him standing next to Danny Ainge, and he's shorter than Danny Ainge.
They are you don't realize the strength of these people.
Oh, no, Charles.
But Austin Carr, I saw him a few years ago. The guy's not heavy. I mean, he's older, he's mature, so he's not skinny. But, I mean, the dude's wearing a 57 coat. I mean, these are huge men.
Well, when you're 6'7", a 50 coat is going to make you look skinny, right?
What's weird is when
the biggest dude I ever saw in person was that Ohio State running back that was 6'2", a Heisman Trophy winner.
The '90s. Well, the running backs get bigger and the linemen get smaller as they get older.
Yeah, this guy, what was his name? Remember him?
Well, not the guy who won the Heisman 2 years in a row.
The Heisman back in the 1990s.
Yeah, but it was the guy who won it 2 years in a row. That was Herschel. Was that Herschel Walker?
No, he's from Georgia.
All right, who was the guy? I just heard it the other day and I forgot the name.
Yeah, when I saw him in person, I saw him in New Orleans. I was at an economics conference, and Fox was there for the bowl games and the NFL games that weekend. And I was in the hotel waiting for my buddy to get out of his presentation. I was just in the lobby. And the guy comes walking by me, and it looked like a big freaking rectangle. I mean, he was just massive.
Well, the example that I'll give, and when we get back to the business thing here, is I went to a Notre Dame function, and Alan Page.
Eddie George.
He's a big man. He's a huge man.
That guy.
Yeah.
And he wasn't fat, but... Dude, I didn't want to walk in front of him. Well, he would have just.
But I mean, when he was a running back, he was probably 6'4", 230.
And it was crazy. Yeah, how big that guy was.
But Alan Page was was he the only guy to ever win MVP as a defensive player, or something? He
played for Minnesota,
and then he played for the Bears. He was a spectacular player. But then he started to run marathons. But the dude was, you could tell. I mean, his hands were big, and he was big shoulders. But I bet when I saw him, he was down. He was running marathons. I bet he was 225.
Yeah.
And a week later, I go to Vegas, and who walks by? But I look at him. I go, the guy looks familiar. It was Franco Harris. For God's sake, the guy looked like a refrigerator walking by. He was huge. He had big, like you said, big huge.
He's
shoulders.
Not fat.
No, big huge shoulders, and he was like the same size all the way down. I go, that guy's got to be 260 if he's an ounce or 270. The backs get
Eddie
bigger.
George, man. All right, was impressive.
All right, so what is? We've got this thing now where a lot of reasons, be it politics, be it government picking favors, being NVIDIA deciding who their partners are, whatever it is, you're seeing this amazing melt-up in some stocks, which, and by the way, I'm doing my best.
Well, I think it's 100% the Fed not controlling the growth in the M2, and it's created so much money that money has to go somewhere. You know, banks don't want to leave it in the banking system and earn, 4 or 5% with interest on reserves. They want to make more. But all sectors outside of the stock market have been shaky and they have been growing. So that money ends up leaking out of the banking system to investors in the form of margin debt. And that's juicing the stock market. So that is happening. All I'm saying is M2 growth in a year from now has moderated in my chart to about 3% growth over the course of the year.
If you look at the month,
good sign for inflation.
Okay, and here we have dueling charts.
But those prices have still risen. So they're high prices. And I have them growing at about 3% over the course of the next year. So we have high prices. They're going to grow from what I can see, an additional 3% over the course of the year.
In my simpleton chart, in the last 6 months, it's accelerated dramatically. So you and I have dueling charts, and we'll see who wins.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But right now I have M2 weekly growing at an annual rate of 5% over last year, Over last year, it's going to M2 has increased 5.2%. Well,
have you come across the phenomenon when they used to put out the weeklies that the last week of the month doesn't necessarily match the monthly?
Well, what I do is when I get the new weekly numbers, I because of adjustments, I always use the 5-year CSV file that I download from Fred.
Okay.
And then I drop that on my spreadsheet that creates an automated quadratic trend and plots the new data points.
But when they used to do something bizarre like actually give you the weeklies during the week, you know, when they were trying to be current.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they gave it up to date, yeah.
Okay, but I'm saying even then, I remember back then, if you took, say, May 30th would be the Friday, and you took that number, you had to be careful. You didn't take that number as the monthly, because the monthly was a lot different than the last Friday of the month, which I never could quite figure that one out. But they must come at it from two different spots, or they adjust one or the other. I don't know. But you always had to be careful that if you used the monthlies, it wasn't always the last week of the month, which is kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just how it rolls. And I wish the Fed was still publishing their checking accounts and cash held by the top 1%. They stopped doing that.
They are, just not to you.
Yeah. I think I tweeted it so much that they decided to not publish it anymore.
Yeah, why would they want to give anybody? So what do you make of, before we go to break here, what do you make of this? I was bitching earlier that the buffoons that come out and say, well, you know, look at how much out of spending is terrific. Well, okay, prices are up. How, when we come back from break, how exactly does a regular person watching the news shows see, okay, retail sales are X, they look great, consumers doing fine, when in fact the prices are up? Of course people are spending more. And now how do you combat well with the 2.6% savings rate, which is the lowest now since one month of COVID? I'll dig that number out. Or the fact that the credit cards are going up. I mean, obviously, people are spending, but they're not getting anywhere. And S&P futures down 13, NASDAQ futures down 31. We're down a lot more than that, but we buy the dip, of course, all the time. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allen, Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 14. NASDAQ futures down 34. Again, not much after the big run-ups we've had. Individual stocks today, we've got who's the big one up here? We've got Marvell's up almost $40. It's 20% after NVIDIA came out and talked about Marvell. All you got to do is talk about one of these companies, and they all of a sudden blow up hundreds of billions of dollars, for God's sake. But that's what we're in. Got Meta up 346. And Microsoft down 14 after being a big run-up yesterday. NVIDIA, of course, is up another 265, and you always have to think, I know it's boring, 25 billion shares outstanding, so $2 is 50 billion in market cap. That's a lot. Okay, over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 193.8%. European stocks rebound as oil prices slip. Okay, FTSE up 19.2%. CAC around up 52.6%. By the way, Trump and with Maria Bartiromo on CNBC yesterday, no, CNBC, sorry, not Maria Bartiromo, said he doesn't care about the negotiations in Iran, whether they're on or off. It was an interesting comment. I think he does care. Nikkei down 200.3%. Hang Seng up 640, 2.5%. Asia markets closed mixed as Iran war uncertainty keeps investors on edge, but Hang Seng is up a bunch. Shanghai up 17.6%. Bonds, and these have been kind of all over the block. 10 years back down to 4.34, was over 4.5, came back down. It went down 5 base points, 2.95. It was over 3. Japan, 2.67. Not much change there. Oil, down at $1.18, 90.98. It was running back up. Now it's coming back down as people trying to figure out what is going on with the strait and so forth. Brent down $1.23, 93.75. RBOB down 2 cents, 3.06. So that puts gas depending on your state tax situation and other stuff, somewhere between probably 390 and 425, depending on what you're doing, maybe 450. Gold, a little bit of a bounce today, up 53 bucks. Was down yesterday, 43.59. Silver up $1.44, 76.69. Foreign exchange, euro, dollar stuck in narrow band as traders eye Middle East data. That is the truth. It is a narrow band. Pound still 134.7, and the euro 116.5. The Japan right at their danger point, 159.75, and they panic when it gets to 160. Crypto down 2,300 bucks, 69,068, under 70,000. I'm going to ask Hal if there's some trouble in Bitcoin land. Why things have been creeping down like that? What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports, Ricky? Cubs didn't play, can't lose.
Good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:35 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 59 degrees right now with a high of 68. Plenty of sunshine and great temperature today to be outside. Tonight will be clear with a low of 57. Phoenix, Arizona, 80 degrees right now with a high of 105. Mostly sunny and very warm, and tonight they will have clear skies and a low of 76 degrees. Traffic in Chicago is looking pretty bleak. Heavy traffic on major expressways, inbound and outbound today, particularly on Kennedy. There's a disabled vehicle on right shoulder of Kennedy Express lanes eastbound and Armitage Avenue exit 48A. There's an accident reported on the right shoulder of Eisenhower inbound on Central Avenue exit 23B. No accidents reported on Stevenson or Dan Ryan, but there is heavy congestion on the inbound lane, so expect some delays for that. For the MLB, White Sox lose to Twins 9-6 and Diamondbacks beat Dodgers 4-1. Today we got Sox at Twins at 6:40 p.m., Athletics at Cubs at 7:05 p.m., and Dodgers at Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. For the NHL, Stanley Cup Finals start tonight. Golden Knights at Hurricanes at 7 p.m. And for the NBA Finals, they're going to start this Wednesday with Knicks heading down to San Antonio. Game starts at 7:30 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back over to you.
So, Al, how do you keep the numbers that you hear? Seems like every number that comes out now, if you only give one number, it's almost like you're preaching.
And it's even worse if you use aggregated numbers.
Yeah, it's almost like you can tell somebody's agenda by the number they use.
Yeah, you have to disaggregate. Like, you don't want to just look at lending. You want to look at lending since the end of 2025. Since the beginning of 2025. Since the beginning of 2025. Lending's up about 10%. But lending to non-bank, non-depository financial institutions is up 42%. Lending to commercial and industrial loans, that kind of lending is up about 10%. Residential lending is up maybe a couple percentage points. So you, instead of looking at the aggregate numbers, you want to look at sector by sector. So, because aggregates can lie. And here's a great example of how aggregates, like an average, can lie.
Where in that mix is like a smaller electric plumbing company, those kinds of places?
Yeah, whenever I do research, my unit of measure is the smallest metric, the metric closest to the decision maker. Like, I will estimate labor demand using individual level data, individual worker level data. Or at a firm level, I use firm counts or establishment counts at like the smallest unit of measure, which is the county. I don't use aggregates like national aggregates or state aggregates. And the problem with that is, in a real simple example, if you average the height of people in a locker room after the game is over in an NBA game, the average height of the people in the locker room is 6'5", maybe, right? If my kids walked in there, if the triplets walked into that room and you took the average at that point, the average would drop to 6'1". And the mistake people make is, oh, people are getting shorter. No, they're just new people here. And that's generally what happens when the economy's growing robustly. It draws a lot of people from other nations. And most of these people are going to have low job skills. And so when the economy's growing robustly, the average wage will fall. And people will say, oh, wages are down. No, they're down. The average is down because there's a lot more people here who have pulled the average down. When the economy goes into recession, a lot of the people go back to their home countries, and you'll see the real wage rise. And people will say, hey, look at that. Real wages are rising. People are doing better. No, if you take the average of people who were here before and after the economy went up and down, their wages probably haven't changed much. So that's the problem with aggregates, is when you see an average fall, you think, oh, everybody's doing worse. Or if you see an average rise, you think everybody's doing better. And so you got to be really careful when you're looking at aggregates.
Well, okay, so how do you, when everybody looks at M2 and you look at ease of money, and I'm going to say on the one end, you know, assuming you're not, we don't find your name on Interpol or something, because we got to check all that stuff. If you open up an account here at PTI or anywhere, and you said, I want to buy 1,000 shares IBM, and I say, okay, it's $311. That would be $311,000. Plus, we got to charge you a bunch of commission just for laughs. You know, we wouldn't. And you're going to say, how much do I have to send you? And I would say, you're going to have to send me $155.5. RBC or IB just gave you $155,000 loan on essentially a 30-second, whatever. Now you've got collateral, obviously. But what would it take for the construction firm of Hal and Chief to go to a bank and get $155,000 loan for our next house remodel, because we just paid cash for the house? I'm going to say it'd be like pulling somebody's canine. We're going to both sign over my girlfriend and your wife, both of our houses, and it's going to take 3 months. How can you tell how easily, and these are the people that, you know, the administration and the administration before and other people, we're going to make it easy for small businesses and mid-sized business. Meanwhile, every day, every week, every month, the last four administrations have made it harder and harder on those people that they keep talking about they're helping. I'm going to say for the place where my nephew works, they have a machining company or whatever, metal service company, where they'll do parts for other people, and they'll, you know, do a lot of different stuff. Whether it's over, you know, get parts on a weekend from one of those machines that can do everything, or you want to order 50 pieces and whatever. I'm going to say for that guy to decide he needs to expand and get the loan to do exactly what Trump and Biden and Obama and all the other guys lip-serviced about, how they want to make it so easy for those guys, because we all know that small businesses are the growth of employment. I'm going to say they did nothing but make it worse for those guys over the last 20 years. I think that loan is very difficult to get. People at Chase don't even want to talk to them because it's probably not big enough. People at, you know, Jamie Dimon's firm don't want to talk to them. So hopefully there's a smaller mid-sized bank around that'll deal with them, hopefully. And hopefully the guy's personal credit good, it has a nice house. I mean, the same people they keep telling you they're trying to, and by the way, you're the one who's kind of codified this for me, saying that the difference between the banking laws and the money going out, that the money going out is not going as evenly as it maybe it did 50 years ago. That was your conclusion. So I keep quoting you on that all the time. Now, how do you fix that? Or do you want? Or let's put it this way: do they even really want to fix it, or they only want the money available for the people that are their buddies? And I'm just talking about just Republicans. I'm talking about everybody.
Well, anybody like Trump, who's a real estate developer, all real estate developers love the inflation play. They love the fact that the central bank inflates the currency.
You know what? You cannot try and tell that to a MAGA guy. He would never do that. He's too sacred.
Yeah. It doesn't matter if Trump's, you know, for the MAGA guy.
Yeah.
I have brothers and cousins who are MAGA.
What I'm saying is the MAGA person won't even give you that.
Yeah. So to the MAGA person, it doesn't matter if Trump is doing this on purpose or unintentionally. Just from his experience of working in New York City, where land is, you know, fixed and small relative to the number of people who want to live there, and operating a business in New York City under an inflationary regime like the Federal Reserve, he's learned that his business does well when the Fed inflates the currency. And every real estate developer knows that. That's why my wife and I have tried to get into the real estate biz.
I'll bet his
crooked, and it's very difficult for small people like us to get into that biz.
I'll bet he's heard stories about his crooked grandfather in Germany, knowing buddies of his that were farmers and paid the farms off in inflated currency. He probably still own them to this day.
The property owners during the Weimar Republic did very well, because their principal the amount they owed on the loan did not change with inflation, but the rents that they charged increased at hundreds of thousands of percent annually. And in a couple of years, they could charge a rent that would essentially pay off the principal.
Yeah.
So the property owners really do well in this kind of environment. And people in this realm, in this field, all understand that. And so they want the Fed to continue being an engine of inflation. Because if they buy real estate or stocks on loan, the principal of that loan does not change with the inflation. In real terms, it collapses. If the higher the inflation rate, the more the Federal Reserve prints, the more that principal collapses, and faster it collapses in real terms when you adjust for inflation. So that's what these kinds of people, I'm not saying they're evil. That's just the rules that have been in place for years.
I am.
I don't necessarily think they're evil. I think they want to keep this system going because they've learned that it benefits them.
But you're not going to get Harry Truman, who didn't know anything. He's not going to do that. These guys are all involved.
Yeah, but he's not running the central bank.
Okay, but I'm saying if the president didn't want the central bank to do that, they wouldn't be doing it.
No, I think the central bank is outside of the executive branch. And its goal, it is owned by the big banks. And
I'm saying
the most power, Hal, or the Fed, because it's a cartelized monopoly.
Hal, if you and I firmly believe in Fed independence, but I also think they haven't been independent in a long time, since maybe Volcker. So if you and I are in the Oval Office...
Well, I think what makes them unindependent is they want the approval of the Academy.
Okay, what I'm saying is...
They want the approval of the Academy. So if you believe they're not independent, they want the approval of the media, they want the approval of the economists at Harvard and Yale and UCLA and California Berkeley. They want that approval.
Nope.
So in that sense, they're not politically independent.
Paul, or this guy, or the guy before him, or the lady before him, none of them are independent enough to say... We've poured too much money in the system. We're going to fix that for the average American. We're going to draw out the 50% we've put in the last 6 years, and we're going to bring it down for the regular American. And oh, by the way, if it costs the stock market 40%, so be it. Nobody can do that now. Nobody can do that. You'll be assassinated if you do that.
Yeah. This new guy seems to want to do that, but the question is, will he do it?
Well, Powell tried to do it in Trump's first term.
You can't say Powell's independent.
He's
independent of Republicans, but he's not independent of Democrats.
Do you remember what happened? He started
to reduce the economy for Kamala Harris.
In 2018, he started to draw the stuff down. And he was invited to the White House, Trump and all his cronies. And when he came out the next day, all of a sudden his policy changed. Now, whether he was paddled or waterboarded, I don't know. But he obviously was ridden the riot act that... This is what the real people want you to do, and he's been floating the money there.
What time of year was the 2018 meeting with Trump?
I'm sure if you googled Trump and
because
Paul,
what I remember about 2018 he started raising interest rates.
Yeah, and what happened to the market
before that midterm election, and the stock market dropped 20%.
Yeah, and that's when he was
just in time for
Okay, but what I'm saying is
no. That's why I'm saying I don't think Powell's pretending like he's independent. No, I don't think he's independent at all. I think he wants the elite.
Well, that's why is Trump
in the media and at the Academy to clap him?
Why is he
going after the orange man? You know,
no, he's not.
So
he's done everything that Trump wanted him to do.
I don't think so. I think he's reluctantly kind of been pulled to that. But
whatever, that's what he did.
But Tom, you got to look at what he did right before the last presidential election.
Oh, come on. Don't worry about that. Every losing Republican from going back to Bush claims they lost because of the Fed. Bullshit.
Tom, the Fed is not politically... That's my point. The Fed is not politically independent. And Powell claiming that he's politically independent? He's only politically independent of the Republicans.
I don't... All right.
He's not independent. He wasn't independent under Biden. He wasn't independent under... they're not independent. Because they want
exactly,
the approval
that's exactly
of the
what
media
I'm, that's what I'm saying.
And the Academy.
My point is the spot is not powerful enough to go against Congress and the president.
I think he is. I think he thinks that.
Okay. when they sent out the check.
You can't audit the Fed.
Hal, listen to me for a second, please. When they started sending checks out to people, he could have said, knock yourself out. Go borrow the money or tax for the money. I'm not printing it for you. But he didn't. He increased the money supply by 40% in 6 months. So Trump, then Biden, could send checks out to people. He never said, I'm not doing it. He did it. He did exactly what they wanted him to do. Right?
Well, what I'm saying, Tom, is the Fed is not independent. And it doesn't matter if it's...
Why are we arguing? I'm telling you they're not... I'm telling you they're not independent.
I know exactly, but the Fed, though, the Fed is a government monopoly, a government-created and protected monopoly of the biggest banks in the country. And the Fed is going to create inflation. It'll create more inflation for presidents it likes. It'll create less inflation for presidents it doesn't like. And if you remember Ed Burns... Ed Burns was a Milton Friedmanite, and he gets into the Fed chair, and he loves, apparently.
It wasn't Ed Burns, it was Arthur Burns, wasn't it?
Arthur Burns, sorry. Yeah. Arthur Burns.
Who's Ed Burns? Is he a TV guy of yours?
I was, like, in diapers at that point, so I don't remember him too well.
Is he a drinking buddy of yours? Is Ed Burns guy?
Maybe. Maybe he's a Navy buddy, I don't know. But, I mean, he comes in there, and he's supposed to be, you know, in that camp with Milton Friedman, and he doesn't do anything like he was a friend of Milton Friedman, right, or
can I set
to Milton Friedman.
Can I set the tone for the listeners here? If a government, any president, whoever it is, if you're taking in $10 billion and the next year you say to yourself, self, with Congress, all the people, and they say, it looks to me like for social, for military, for fixing up the parks, whatever it is, if the next year we're going to spend $11 billion, and under the current tax situation, whatever it is, income tax, payroll tax, tariffs, you name it, if it only coming in to $10 billion, what are we going to do? Well, Hal and I, maybe we'll agree for once.
We agree the Fed is not, okay. In my opinion, the Fed is not independent.
He's not even going to let me agree when I'm agreeing. the both of us, as they say on the South Side, are going to go up on the blackboard, showing my age, and we're going to say, okay, here are your choices. One, increase the taxes to $11 billion, so now you have the $11 billion that you plan on spending. That would be choice number one. Not a good choice, but a choice. Number two, borrow the extra billion, either from people here or from overseas, that gets you your $11 billion. Or, choice three, talk to the Fed guy and have him print you $1 billion. Those are the three choices. Are we agreed at least on that?
Oh, yeah, I think so, but I don't think the Fed's goal is to be a source of taxation. I think the Fed's goal, that's just an artifact, right, a symptom of what it does.
Okay, so in
what its purpose is, to create inflation for people it admires and wants to be respected by, the financial news centers, the financial institutions. All these people, for some reason, think the Fed is an institution of free market capitalism. It's not.
They're supposed to be a retarder on what...
Yeah.
Well, by definition, if they don't, if they just control the money supply... Like you and I think, agree what they should do.
I think, politically, pragmatically, what I want the Fed to do is the least bad thing they can do, okay, and that's to grow the money supply at a slow rate.
All right, so now what you're implying...
As an Austrian economist, right, or...
Okay, before you...
I really don't think the Fed
should... First of all, you've never been
to
Vienna. How can you be an Austrian economist if you've never been to Vienna?
Well, Austrian economist doesn't... require you to be a citizen or a visitor of the country.
Oh, I don't know about that. You might like it. I think you at least got to see the place. Anyway.
At least you didn't say Australia. That's good.
Now, before you disagree, because I know you have to, if the Fed does what you want them to do, which, by the way, is what I want them to do, so there's a point of agreement. So we're going to grow the money supply at 3% or 2.5%, because that's the productivity and population. That's the number we set. And all of a sudden, COVID, a war, you name it, comes along, and somebody from Congress or the president knocks on your door or calls you or X's you, whatever the hell they do these days, and say, hey, Hal, Chief, you two guys, we need $200 billion we feel like spending. And you and I are going to say, what's that got to do with me? I'm increasing the money supply 3% because I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. Yeah, but wait a minute. We don't want to tax anybody anymore. And if we start borrowing money, the interest rates are going up so much that we can't afford it. That's when you and I say for a second time, okay, that's your problem, not mine. Okay, name me a guy since Volcker that has said that.
Yeah. Well, see, another thing that happened about that time was modern monetary theory became the new vogue.
Modern monetary theory is the biggest load of bullshit that anybody's ever
come across. It became the new vogue thing. Yeah. And so you have people at the Fed who, again, want to be respected by the academicians at these various institutions, these Ivy League schools who are all in on this modern monetary theory. So about the same time as you got a bunch of people at the Fed who are like, yeah, modern monetary theory, let's try it. And so they just dump a bunch of money into the system.
For those of the listeners who don't understand, modern monetary theory says don't worry about the money supply. Put it in there, it may not create inflation. But guess what? It did, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, yeah.
I don't see how...
It created a ton of inflation that we're still feeling the effects of.
Yeah, well, it's still happening.
Yeah. There is so much money being pumped. There's so much money that's been pumped into the system. It leaks out in the form of loans to the people who buy stocks on margin.
Do you?
I mean, that's what's going on.
Do you remember the name of the guy who wrote the classic paper regarding money supply? It had to do with cigarettes and concentration camps. Do you remember the guy who wrote that? I probably still have it at home somewhere.
Yeah, you could share that with me. That'd be an interesting read. I could incorporate one of my classes.
I'll try and find it. I need to clean up my old stuff anyway. But basically it comes down to if you're in a concentration camp or any place that's a closed society, there were cigarettes, and of course there was other stuff. There was booze, there was, you know, whatever. And everything was based on cigarettes because it had a value to itself. It wouldn't be to me because I don't smoke, but everything back then, everybody did. So if...
And you got to do something in prison, right?
So, well, yeah. So everybody,
smoking is something.
So then, so everything was allied to cigarettes. So in other words, if you wanted a half pint of booze that somehow was available, it was 20 cigarettes, or something else. Maybe an extra pillow was 30 cigarettes. Everything was based. Cigarettes became essentially the money, and there was only a certain amount of cigarettes that they somehow smuggled in every day. So it was kind of a fixed money supply. So all of a sudden...
Well, it actually wasn't fixed because people smoke them, and therefore...
Well, that's what I'm saying, but there was a supply of them. So it was growing 3% a day, and people were smoking 3% a day, like you're talking about.
Yeah, so it was constant.
Yeah, it was a constant... So then all of a sudden, the concentration camp gets... Or prisoner war camp. It wasn't a camp. It was prisoner war camp. Gets liberated. And the first thing that the Americans do is dump, you know, 50 cartons of cigarettes on the place. Well, it blows everything because all of a sudden, now wait a minute! You can't give me 3 cigarettes for the half pint. Now I want 30 because look how many cigarettes are around here.
By the way, the guards probably love the American cigarettes. So yeah. you could buy stuff from the guards. Easily.
So think of it the same way. If all of a sudden there's 10% more money in the system, it's not whether it's against the British pound. It's now there's 10% more money chasing the same amount of widgets. And people are going to say, wait a minute, that dollar is not as good as it was a few years ago. I need $11 for my widget now, not 10. And that way, if you happen to have friends, which I do, that long before COVID maybe saved, say their retirement account was $1.5 million, and they had $1 million in the bank. Just in the bank, you know, very conservative people, and there still are people like that, that made 0.5%, 1% over how many years, hell. I'm going to say their $1 million in the bank is now worth $550 to $650 in terms of buying power than when they put it in there.
Yeah.
And why doesn't our population understand that they have been stolen? And the one thing I'm surprised that you forgot to mention, you said people who own stuff, you know, people who own farms, people who own, let's say, the Doral, the single biggest benefiter by inflation is the government. The 30-year bonds they put out there in the middle of COVID at 1.5% or 2%, when somebody comes back and gives them that $100,000 back, what's that $100,000 be worth? 200? I mean, 20? At most? That's why government likes to borrow, because they're going to pay you back in money.
Yeah,
much
the government
less.
Loves to borrow.
Yeah, they're going to pay.
Can
you back
imagine what would happen in California if they had a central bank?
Well, but a lot of places would do that.
Yeah,
a lot of places would do that. California has to balance their books. Every state does.
They don't have a balanced budget. Their deficit is large as Texas's surplus.
I'm saying most states have a law.
Or Florida's surplus.
It has to somehow balance. They borrow to do something, but they're supposed to balance, right?
Yeah,
because the state can't come up with money, but they can't keep borrowing, or they can, actually what they can do is they can.
Well, they keep borrowing. They find
they also can
to
they also
them,
can
right?
stiff the pension fund. Yeah. They can not fund the pension fund even though they know they owe them.
Yeah,
which is a problem because if they ever have to declare bankruptcy, the pension fund's going to get stiffed.
Oh yeah.
Anywho, so well, how many who are you teaching? What are you doing? What if I want to come to class?
Well, this summer I'm teaching health economics back to back. And right now I'm working on a research paper I got to revise and resubmit, which is it makes you feel good when you get that email from an editor of a journal.
Oh, cool.
On a paper that I wrote regarding the opportunity zones.
Wow.
We have to make some changes, and so I'm working on that right now. I worked on it yesterday for about 10 hours until about 11 o'clock at night.
How are you doing on your study on the, who gets
the bank
reserves?
Well, that's going to be my next project. Right now I just submitted a paper to Applied Economic Letters. This one is a review of economic analysis, and then my co-author and I are working on a paper that's going to go to Applied Economics, and that Applied Economics one, we're using the unemployment rate as a statistical proxy for not being able to observe what the difference between the minimum wage and what the market wage would be with a binding minimum wage. So we're
aren't you finding the unemployment rate really kind of it? Unemployment rate is kind of a useless thing. Are you trying to prove that it is, or are you trying to use it?
But when the unemployment rate is really, really high in a state that has a high minimum wage, right, the higher that unemployment rate is, the higher the minimum wage is above the market wage. So we're using it as a proxy for something that we can't observe.
All right, two quick questions. How do you figure out the unemployment rate if people are actually looking or not, but that's maybe a question for next time.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a statistical technique that we're using, and we got some really, my co-author created these really fascinating charts. I was like blown away when I saw
it. What happened to the presentation you gave down at Auburn? Have you done any more work on that?
Oh yeah, that's the one that it's going to be published in the Papers and Proceedings of the Quarterly Journal of Austrian Economics.
So I have to,
and we had to reduce it to 3,000 words, and then because we still own the copyright and we modified it substantially, we turned it around and stripped it down to about 1,400 words, and we're sending that to Applied Economic Letters.
Now, if I want to get a signed copy, do I have to kind of like buy you drinks and stuff?
I'll just print one of the what do they call them, the proofs. I'll email you a proof of it.
Yeah, I don't have to buy you drinks or anything to get it.
But after that, what I want to do is I want to explore the banking loan changes of March 2020.
That's what I want to be.
If
you want
and
me,
then after
if you
that,
want me, if you want me to help you with that to do some research, I do it.
Yeah, after that, I'm going to explore the effect of AI, the rollout of AI in what, 2022, December 2022, on the employment sector and the establishment counts in the sector, professional, scientific, and technology.
Hey, good stuff. If you want a little help on some of this, if you want me to dig up some of the old stuff, just let me know what you need.
Send me that article about
I'll
the
try and find
cigarette.
It. Yeah, but
in the concentration camp.
You have to understand what it's going to entail for me to dig it out.
I can just imagine your home office being stacks and stacks of papers like the psychologist in Goodwill Hunting.
It's pretty close. Anyway, thanks, bud. Have a good week. Don't argue with your wife like you argue with me. It wouldn't be good. You know, S&P futures down 60, NASDAQ futures down 41. Ricky, good job considering the characters we are on today. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.